Good to have you all with us. I call your attention to the book of 1 John. 1 John chapter 1. First John chapter 1, in fact, the book of 1 John, 2nd and 3rd, were written probably 60 years after Christ's sacrifice on the cross and his ascension into heaven. So the followers of Christ had been speaking and preaching Christ for 60 years. In that 60-year time, in the church, the early church, several things began to creep in. The Jews constantly argued against the deity of Christ. And so that was a constant fight that Christians had against the Jewish community. We believe that Jesus was God. They denied that. Jesus repeatedly said over and over again in the Gospels, I am. That two-word phrase was a pinpoint to develop an understanding of who God was. He was the God of the universe. And so Christians in that early church movement had this attack that was prevalent in their time. Secondly, there were people from inside who had began to teach and deny that God ever took a body, that God never became man. The philosophic name for that group were Gnostics. Gnosticism simply taught that God was God, but he never put on flesh, never came to earth, never became man. That became a real difficulty in the body. We had to fight against that. They had to make statements against it. They had to stand for what was right. And then there was a third problem with the Greeks. The Greeks were intellectuals, philosophic. Remember, Paul went to Mars Hill and talked to the philosophers in that area and said, I know this. You worship a lot of gods. He said, I found this one mark that said, to the unknown God, the Greeks believed that the Greek word, listen very carefully, logos, which is translated in the New Testament, the word, that this Greek term, logos, meant the supreme intellect, the greatest wisdom. They studied it. From Socrates to Plato and all of in between. For hundreds of years, they would look at this word. They understood that it was something beyond them, that it was something that was supernatural. They couldn't explain it, they couldn't put their finger on it, they could not really grasp it. And so they struggled with this. Whenever the church or the Christian spoke to them, one of the things they always brought up was this logos thing. We believe in but they couldn't put their finger. Was it a he? Was it a God? Was it a force? What was it? And so John, as part of the church, and by now he was pastoring in Ephesus, wrote this little letter. And if you're careful to look at it, you'll find that he answered all three of the prophets. He dealt with the denial of the deity of Christ. He dealt with the denial of the humanity of Christ. He dealt with the misunderstanding of Logos and what it was and what it did, who it represented. He dealt with all of these. Now, in our passage for this morning, I want you to see something. Chapter 1, verse 5 says, "This, then, is the message which we have heard of him and declared to you." Here's the message: that God is light, and in him is no darkness at all. Now that message came from an author. And John spends the first four verses describing the author. The author that gave the message left for us a story to tell is described by John in incredible terms in the first four verses. Now, we can't look at all those verses, but I want you to just look at verse 1. Because in verse 1, this description answers for us these three questions that had entered the arena of church that were causing difficulty. So John says in verse 1, "That which was from the beginning." He's going to tell us about the author. And the first thing he says about him is that which was from the beginning. Now, it's not the beginning of the world that's spoken about here. Not the beginning of time spoken about here. Not the beginning of Christ's entrance into the world spoken about here. It's not even Genesis 1:1, the creative act, spoken about here. When it says that which was from the beginning, he goes way back beyond creation, beyond time, into the eternal past, and said he was there. He was from the beginning. And that little word "from" indicates an existence before creation. Christ existed before God created the heavens and the earth. What's he telling us in that little statement? He's telling us that Christ was eternal. Eternal. The eternality of Christ. Remember in Hebrews chapter 1, God says to Christ, "Thy throne, O God." He makes it very clear that God believed and God saw and God held that Christ was eternal. Now, these people that were denying the deity of Christ now had a problem. Because John stood up and said, that's fact. That's absolute truth. John stood up and said, Christ is God. He's eternal. He wasn't just a good person. He didn't just give us a new philosophy. He was God. And the person that's writing this letter, that John is giving to us, that we now have in our hands, was written by God. Christ is God. And John, in the first few words, just smashes the denial of the deity of Christ. In the beginning, John said, was the word Logos. The word was with God. And the word was God. You understand? That verse antedates Genesis 1:1. So, the first thing John did is he answered this denial of the deity of Christ with that simple phrase, that which was from the beginning. And he doesn't try to defend the deity of Christ beyond that. But what he does now is he jumps to the humanity of Christ. The Gnostics said he was never, God never took on human form. But what do you do about the writings of the Gospel? They said, well, those were just stories. They were things to help us get a better picture who God is. They were. If he was anything, he was like a ghost, they said. Just outright denial. And what does John do? John says, let me tell you about his humanity. So John now says this, that which was from the beginning, we, the apostles, we have heard all God's people. Wait, this is not speculation. This is not guesswork. No, no, no. He said, we heard it. He spoke, we heard it. He taught, we heard it. He walked around and conversed with us, we heard him. He came to our house, we heard him. We heard him speak. We heard him teach. We heard him inform others. We heard him converse. We heard him. I see the Gnostics running for a hole at this point. That's enough. But he said, that which was from the beginning, we have heard, and we have seen. I love that phrase. It says, that which was from the beginning, we have heard, which we have seen with our eyes. We were eyewitnesses. You could deny a lot of witness, it's makeup or hearsay. But you can't deny an eyewitness. He said, we have seen him with our eyes. I think of Jesus first came on the scene. Andrew first met him and heard him speak and heard him talk and saw him and said, we, to his brother, we have met the Christ. I saw him. Peter. I saw that. was standing right in front of me. He walked right up to me. He talked with me. We shook hands. We had some communion together. Peter, I'm telling you, it's really him. And John, as one of those apostles, said, not only have we heard him, but we have seen him. But he said, not only have we seen, but he said, we've looked upon. That's an interesting word. It means to gather information over a period of time, to watch and observe, to gain knowledge of. So for 3 years, they were looking upon Christ. They were watching his every move. They were listening to every word he said. Nothing fell on deaf ears. They listened. They watched. They learned about him. They brought a man to Jesus. Couldn't walk. All in a room. They had to let him down from the roof. Remember that? And Jesus said, thy sins be forgiven thee. Then he said, take up thy bed and walk. This man had not walked. Peter and all the rest of the apostles were looking upon him and watched him bring healing to that man. Leper came to Christ. Said, if thou wilt, thou canst make me clean. Jesus said, I will be thou clean. And he was clean from that very hour. They followed Christ, talked to him, questioned him, asked him questions. They heard about Lazarus. They said, shouldn't we go and see him? He said, he's sleeping. Well, then, what are we worried about? He said, he's dead. So they went the whole time, they're wondering. They're discussing, well, what's going to happen now? He's dead. He gets there and speaks to Mary. She said he's been dead for 4 days. And he stinketh. He's decaying. Jesus said, where'd they lay him? But the whole time, they're looking upon this. Do you understand that? They're watching this. They're seeing this. This is evidence that is so profound, so beyond normal, so beyond humanity's understanding of what greatness is. And Jesus walked up to that grave and said, Lazarus, come forth. I said this before. He had to say only Lazarus. He was king of life. If he would have said, come forth, there would have been some problems. There would have been a lot of graves empty that day. He said, Lazarus, come forth, and he came forth out. He said, loose him and let him go. They were eyewitnesses. They looked upon him. They heard him. They saw him. And they said one other thing. Our hands have handled. Don't you love that? We have touched him. We have touched, listen to me, we have touched God. John 1:18, no man hath seen God at any time. The only beloved who is in the bosom of the Father, he hath declared, he and that word declared, same word here we use in this chapter 1 and verse 5, declared. It means to show above. It means to put on display. It means to show the God that no man had ever seen the earth, talking to people, doing miracles. He said, our hands have handled him.
Good night.
I think of John chapter 13. Jesus is in the upper room. The supper's over. And Jesus goes and gets a little pan of water, a towel and a rag, and sits down before each of those disciples and washes their feet. When I think of that, I think of the tenderness, the humble spirit, the love, the compassion. And they're sitting there at their feet being washed. I think of that little verse, that little part of that verse. Our hands have handled. I could just see him washing their feet and maybe John reaching over and putting his hand on Jesus and say, Master, you don't have to do this. See them looking at themselves with tears in their eyes, the tenderness and compassion of this one, and John recalling 60 years later some of those events and saying, our hands have handled of the word. And this is an absolute attack on the Greeks. They were trying to figure out what the Logos was, what it meant. They had been doing this for hundreds of years, couldn't come up with an answer. Socrates didn't know, Plato didn't know, Pythagoras wrote a whole book on it and didn't know. They couldn't figure it out, and John says, our hands of the Logos of life. You dummies. You spent 400 or 500 years trying to figure it out philosophically, and God said, I have sent him into the world, and you can see him. Literally, he is very, very real. In fact, if they would have just read the New Testament, they would have found that little verse that says, in him are hid all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. It's not in a philosophy. It wasn't a thing. It wasn't a power. It was God in the flesh. And God came down and settled on the earth for 33.5 years. And those disciples, those wonderful apostles, walked with him, talked with him, saw him, conducted their lives with him. And John now could say, 60 years later, we heard him. We saw him. We handled him. He is the word of life. He answered the question. I like it. And so John says, now all the way to verse 5. That which we have heard of him, this one in verse 5. That means that a message is Jesus left a message. He left us something to do, something to say, something to live, something to preach, something to declare. He did. That which we have heard of him and declared to you, and as we spoke it, we gave you a discerning look at it. You were able to understand it and grasp it, come to a knowledge of it. We declared it. what was the main tenor of that message that Christ left? What was the problem with the Greeks? They were in darkness. What was the problem with the Jews? They were in darkness. What was the problem with the Gnostics? They were in darkness. They didn't see the light. The light of the world is Jesus. Come to the light. And so we have this picture of a messenger, our author, delivering a message to John and the rest of the church. And his purpose was, according to our verse, to be declared. We're to bring it to view. We're to cause others to see the real message. Not a made-up one. Not one that tried to mix Judaism with Christianity. Not one that tried to get along with the philosophers of the day and not offend them. No, they declared the message. And by the way, these men that heard him, saw him, touched him. These men, everyone, died by martyrdom, with the exception of one, the writer here. No. Peter was crucified upside down. Timothy was shot through with darts. Everyone died a terrible, terrible death. For what? For make-believe? No. They died for a cause, with a genuine leader who really lived, who really died, who really rose from the dead, who gave them a message, and they're taking the message and preaching across Asia and around the world that God is light and in him is no darkness at all. You see, Christ dispels the light. He dispels the light. He marks it and rids us of it. He dispels the darkness of sin. Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, Jesus said, I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly of heart. And ye shall find rest unto your soul. My yoke is easy. My burden is light. You want your burden of sin taken away? You want the darkness of sin to be dealt with? Ephesians 1:12 describes the darkness of sin this way. That mankind is without Christ. Without hope. And without God. That's a terrible place to be. Men are walking around in darkness, not able to see what they need to see. They're always looking in a pinhole at something else and never find the truth. God in Christ left us a message handed down through generations to us today that we're to take and share with the world. That's found in this book. He dispels the darkness of sin. He dispels, I think, the darkness. Well, I thought of this, I like this. He dispels the darkness of superstition. The great apostle said in Acts chapter 26 that Christ would come and turn mankind, turn them from darkness to light. That word turn means they were following in a different direction. They were looking at something else. There was a great deal of superstition active in this time of the early church. And by the way, there's a great deal of superstition active today in America. The silly nonsense that people follow, cultic foolishness. How can a man talk 400 people into going down to South America and drinking Kool-Aid, giving it to their kids, and all 400 die? Superstition. Demonic influence. Foolishness. The Yaqui Indians in Ecuador, 1956, met on a little plain on the river. Five missionaries. They were witnessing to them. They decided to come back on a Sunday. They came back on a Sunday, and every one of those missionaries died. The Hawkeye Indians took every one of their lives. They were in darkness. Two years later, Elizabeth Elliot, the wife of one of the men, went back to the tribe, gave the gospel to that chief, and he received the gospel. His darkness became light, and hundreds of those Hawkeye Indians came to Christ, who used to walk in darkness. And superstitious nonsense. And now it has been turned to the light. Christ is the light of the world. Then I think he dispels the darkness of sorrow. What do we do if we didn't have? What do we do if we didn't hear the one say, come unto me? Or the one that says, peace I leave with you, my peace I give unto you. Let not your heart be troubled. What do we do when we pillow our head at night and we can't close our eyes because the ache and the hurt is too great? We can't see the forest or the trees. When we're struggling, aren't you glad that Jesus dispels the darkness of sorrow? Like that little song that, yes, Jesus took my burdens. Amen. He washed away my sorrow. Then I think one last thing, and I can go on, but one last thing. I think that this message, the darkness of self-reproach. More Christians stop serving God because of self-reproach. Something they have done in the past, the devil has convinced them they can never get forgiven. And they're trapped in that judgmental, guilt-ridden life and can't get by it. Read Psalm 51. A Let me tell you, God forgives.
Amen.
And I don't care what you've done, if you bring it to Him, He is faithful and just to forgive you of your sin and to cleanse you from all unrighteousness. Though you may have self-reproach, give it to God and let Him use you for His honor and His glory. This little passage, I could spend another 5 hours on this passage. It's dynamite. One power. John said, we have an author. Let me tell you that. He left us a message. We're to declare it. What did the message say, John? God is light. And in Him is no darkness at all. Lord, help us to study You, to look to You, and realize the incredible greatness. You, Your Son, what He does for all of us.